And now the hand of cold adventure has given our snow globe world another shake, and we have ice fishing. Back in the olden days, like everything else, we did things differently. In wintertime, if the weather was reasonably sunny, the men of Huntsville would have a go at ice fishing. Early on a Sunday morning, from all corners of town, you might see the ice fishermen towing their ice huts down towards Hunter's Bay. Nothing mechanized in those days. The huts themselves were roughly 8 feet square, a solid floor with a hole in the middle to accommodate the fishing lines. These things would be tied onto a wide, tough little sleds towed by a rope in the front. Usually, there were two-man deals, so when it came time to start, one guy towed, the other guy pushed, and they would proceed down the hills, over the snowy streets rutted by now, down to the bay where all the boys would gather, gossip, and wait patiently. The ice hut spent most of the year out back somewhere, but once ice fishing weather came, the boys got the huts out, swept off the dead leaves, loaded the thing onto the sled, called the dog, and headed down to Hunter's Bay to hunt the wily lake trout. These huts were painted many fanciful colors and designs. Each guy had his own mark, and this was important because at noon hour, when the kids had to bring out the hot lunch and the thermos of tea, they needed to be able to spot their dad's huts amongst the many. Much like teepees of the old Plains Indians were adorned with symbols, identification would be crucial. In many instances, one could see the benefit of graffiti. As a kid, I might be out on our street early, practicing with my hockey stick, firing the puck into a snowbank, and up from the hollow, up our street, would come a parade of ice huts, being towed by short, thick men, snow caught up in their beards, crisp, crinkly eyebrows, snow upon their backs. They looked like polar oxen bent to the task. The huts were tied onto the sled, riding like mounted cavaliers, showy with their stripes and patches, rocking to and fro over the snow-lumpy streets, and there, hanging onto the back end, might be Greg's father. My Uncle Floyd might be the one towing the rope. A parade, music provided by the snorting of cold wind through the nostrils, and as a kid with a hockey stick standing aside to let them pass, I thought of them as a long line of circus elephants, gaudy, slightly slanted, not too easy to control. And when the parade got down to the side of the bay, the boys would gather, gossip, and wait. And why did they wait, you might ask? Why didn't they just wander out and start? Start what? Towing their huts around, snorting in the cold, sweating like pigs. You want to wander around, knowing that somewhere under you, just under the ice surface below you, but not more than a foot or so, was a big fish, a laker, a muskie, just out there somewhere, but you don't know where. But Eldon does. The best fish finder in our town was Eldon Bruce. Everybody waited for Eldon to go out on the ice. He seemed to know where the big fish lived. He would tow his hut out, and everybody, man and boy, watched the magician at work. His innate ability to find big fish just under the ice was considered a special gift, like the ability to predict rain. Eldon towed the front with the rope, and Len Blackburn, the tavern owner, pushed and kept it from tottering, much like he did in his day job. And if you were a kid standing on a hill in the snow looking down on the scene, Eldon and Len Blackburn seemed like Arctic caterpillars, a lot of legs movement, stripes of white with faint red below. Once they started tromping around on the snow-covered bay, they began to circle slowly. Eldon would tow the hut out further and further in a widening circle, much like ravens do when they protect their bailiwick. Finally, that would be it. Eldon would get out the auger while Len Blackburn shoveled the snow down to the ice surface, a pale green if the sun strikes it right, and that was the signal. Up to now, the guys had waited respectfully, voices kind of lowered. Dogs sat and leaned against the sled, and ciggies were smoked, and they watched real magic and were proud to be one with him. But now the rest of the ice huts begin to travel out over the bumpy, lumpy snow bay. The huts sway now like drunken sailors. The rear guy is busy pushing with his shoulder. He has his arms wrapped around the short side, and from afar they look like two tango dancers. She's angry because someone's smoking a cigar. Everyone plunked their hut down in a wide circle around Eldon's hut. Protocol demanded a decent space between huts. These intrepid snow oxen, what kind of fish did they go after, you might ask? Lake trout, the char. The Algonquin tribes called them Mamakush, denizens of the deep. Char are cold water fish, and in winter they will swim close to the surface, just below the ice. They can get big, anywhere up to 150 pounds have been recorded. Lake trout have large mouths and are big eaters. Sometimes they even eat odd stuff, coils of string. In the early part of the year, wild pigeons have been found digested. The general term for these fish are lakers, but at home we called them muskies, and they seem to be part of the lunge family. The art of ice fishing in those days was an act of merry engagement. Fish and game cops would try to catch guys with too many hooks, and there were regulations on every point, but we're talking about guys who sweat hard all week, many times outdoors in the freezing sleet, and if a Sunday morning they want to do whatever, then they will. Besides, once order had been established, a good fire in the stove, and too early for lunch to come out, if strangers approached, the dogs would set up a howl. When the weather finally broke, and the sun came out, and the temperatures rose to a reasonable level during the day, it was ice fishing weather, really. And what ice fishing are you talking about? I'm talking about when the bay is finally frozen solid and the boys in town knock the leaves off the ice hut, load it onto the sled, and tow it down to the lake to catch fish. In Grandpa's time, these things were just like two old Johnny houses, 7 foot square, two bench seats that faced each other. The boys would chip a hole through the ice, plunk this wooden house down over the hole, fire up the tin stove from the welder to the floor, open up the whiskey bottle, drop a line, fix a jig, and proceed to get fish. The inside of one of these things, late on a winter sunny afternoon, was rich. There were farts from the lunch the kids brought around noon, and there was bad breath. If you stood on the hillside above the town and looked down on the little bay, you'd see 50 brightly colored huts fanning out in a semicircle from the hut of the best fisherman. If you stood on a hill and looked down in the bay, there were a brightly colored arc of huts on a clean white bed of snow, a Japanese-looking affair, oddly spaced, crudely made, irreverently painted collection of swearing and laughing insanity, all cooped up on a little-known bay in a northern Muskoka town on a Sunday afternoon. A few crows fly overhead, coughing out their news, hack black, hack flat, hack, hack. They're paired up, know each other well, have the same conversation with each other for every day of their lives, except when the wind is up. For the first hour on the bay, it has been quiet. Exhaustion from the tugging and the digging a hole has caused everybody to have a go at serious fishing. The lake was out for fishing, away too windy and dangerous. It wasn't predictable. Could be ice covered by snow here today. Come tomorrow, just snow, then nothing but freezing water. Lakes can shift dramatically. Ice is a nomad and wants to wander. Blue wood smoke is coming up from the ice huts now, little trails, and the wind, more a breeze yet, lines them all up, all susceptible to wind's whim. So she lines them up, little blue wood smoke soldier boys. Thin at the top, they march off and fade rapidly once they are alone over the thin white ice. And who remembers them, one of these blue whippets down in an ice hut? They could be snatched up by the army to fight in France, and they too would disappear over thin white ice. But our lesson wasn't learned yet. This winter day, only wood smoke, holy blue, drifted off in files, driven by a vixen wind, a breeze, really. Below, it's noon hour. All morning, the front door of the fish huts would open. A puff of vacuum air would escape immediately. You knew it as such, for it would be lime green. A quick lime green puff, followed by a figure who staggers just for a moment, gathers himself, and cruises off to jerk open the door of a hut down a ways. A puff of lime green air pops out, and he pops in. After an hour of virtual solitude, 30 or 40 still ice huts, a few dogs wandering, some sleds, noses to the turf, puffs of exhausted, hardened men need to pee. A door would open, puff, out comes a little plaid figure. It steps to one side, stands still, turns abruptly, opens the door, puff, and is gone. In this little clan of huts, doors that sometimes never stopped opening and closing, a kind of lime-green sub-air began to sit low over the battlefield fishing grounds. Hunter's Bay in a winter afternoon, quiet mostly. So far, birds, some fish huts, a pale sky, and a kid on a hillside above somewhere.